The presentation today is going to be about famous Unitarians, and I've mentioned my favorites, Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau, but there are going to be others coming up. And the Sunday Service Committee thought of the idea of doing a series on famous Unitarians. Every few years we do something like this, and each time we learn about a few more of these folks. And Jane Knox and Pam Bocking are going to be making the presentation today, and I'll just give a little background for each of them. Jane and her family joined the fellowship more than 20 years ago. She became interested in Unitarian history and the roles played by significant Unitarians when she contributed to the children's education program during the 1990s. At that time, she supported several preteen members who prepared a Unitarian newspaper that highlighted a few famous Unitarians. Jane is looking forward to hearing about many more unique Unitarians in the months ahead. And Pam is also going to be presenting today, Pam Bocking, and she just has a little short bio here that she thought that's what she wanted. Pam decided to become a member of the Unitarian Fellowship, to become a Unitarian, about 11 years ago. And she thinks that's one of the best decisions she's ever made. So we're looking forward to hearing from both of you. Now I'll move my things away so you have room here.
To introduce our series on famous Unitarians, I'm going to base my remarks on a talk given by Martin Harvey, who's a member of Comox Valley Unitarian Fellowship on Vancouver Island. And the title of his talk is "The World Needs More Unitarians." And he begins, not surprisingly, "The world needs more Unitarians. Canada needs more of us. Why more like us? First, because we represent a noble tradition. Second, because we have sound principles on the back of our weekly order of service, the seven principles. We have sound principles on which to stand. Third, because we're the right people at the right time in the right place to achieve some of what the world so desperately needs." Okay, what about the tradition? Ours is not an old tradition, although many of our values and beliefs can be traced back thousands of years. In a formal sense, the Unitarian movement is only a few hundred years old, yet in this short time, a great deal has been accomplished under this banner. Here are some persons and doings that you no doubt already know about, and some that are probably new to you. Some of our earliest Unitarian forebears are persons like the Spanish-born Michael Servetus that Jane will be talking about soon, a 15th century Spanish-born person. Now Marvin Harvey focuses on British Unitarians. Self-identified Unitarians who made important contributions in Britain include Isaac Newton, Joseph Priestley. He was a Unitarian minister and discoverer of oxygen, who's sometimes been called the father of modern chemistry. Florence Nightingale, Robbie Burns, Samuel Taylor Coleridge, Charles Dickens, and Charles Darwin. Darwin was remarkably contemporary Unitarian in his thinking, in that his research led him to affirm the essential kinship of all creatures, including non-human creatures. He reads as if he could have written our seventh principle, affirming the interdependent web of all of which we are a part. Darwin also contributed a kind of show me the evidence, skepticism, common among Unitarians today. Next, Marvin Harvey moves on to the United States. Many of the founders of the democratic experiment called the United States of America were Unitarian. John Adams, John Quincy Adams, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Thomas Paine, and there's also Paul Revere, Henry David Thoreau, and Ralph Waldo Emerson. The very existence of Harvard University is due to Unitarian influence, especially Ralph Waldo Emerson. In the succeeding 200 years, other significant American Unitarians have included social reformers Julia Ward Howe, Dorothea Dix, Daniel Webster, Clara Barton, who founded the Red Cross, scientists and inventors like Luther Burbank, Samuel Morse, Linus Pauling, the only person, apparently, ever to be awarded two unshared Nobel Prizes, one for chemistry and one for peace. Buckminster Fuller, whom Marshall McLuhan called the 20th century Leonardo da Vinci. American Unitarian writers and entertainers include Walt Whitman, Herman Melville, Nathaniel Hawthorne, P.T. Barnum, George Ripley of Believe It or Not, Carl Sandburg, William Carlos Williams, Ray Bradbury, Kurt Vonnegut, and E.E. Cummings. In public life were Adlai Stevenson, Elliot Richardson, who was Secretary of State, who stood up to Richard Nixon in the Watergate affair. Also, newspaperman Horace Greeley, who was an early supporter of unions and cooperatives, and civil rights leader Whitney Young, who strived to end employment discrimination in the United States. Internationally, we might add musicians Béla Bartók, Edvard Grieg, and Malvina Reynolds, and other international figures are Albert Schweitzer and Alexander Graham Bell. Apparently, he's also claimed as Scottish and Canadian. So he starts the list of the Canadians. So it says, Canada has seen some notable Unitarians as well. The forenamed Bell, Brock Chisholm, who established the World Health Organization, Emily Stowe, the first female doctor in Canada, Lotta Hitchmanova, founder of the Unitarian Service Committee, now called USC, Arthur Lismer of the Group of Seven, James Coyne, longtime governor of the Bank of Canada, and then in Canada, the literary and entertainment figures, Margaret Lawrence, Lister Sinclair, Maeve Moore, and poet Dorothy Livesey, Maclean's editors, Ralph Allen and Blair Fraser. In addition, there have been at least 17 MPs, 7 prominent MLAs, and 6 noted mayors, and the famous Arctic explorer, Vilhelmur Stefansson. Marvin Harvey continues, I've mentioned a large number of individuals and their contributions to society. In addition, I want to remind us of the immense contribution made by our movement itself, especially in equality for women, civil rights, world peace, sexual identity, and preference. The struggles that many Christian and Muslim organizations are going through regarding the place of women and lesbian and gay issues have been settled long, long ago in the Unitarian community. And in the recent past, there have been laudable actions by Unitarian congregations, such as the refugee sanctuary provided by the Ottawa congregation and rallies opposing the so-called Gateway Project by Vancouver Unitarians. We are heirs then to a noble tradition, one that's contributed to society far in excess of its numbers, and this tradition is the first reason that Martin Harvey believes the world needs more Unitarians. Marvin Harvey continues, a second reason is that we gather to affirm a fine set of principles. They're not perfect, they're not complete, but they are enough. We affirm the worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, acceptance and encouragement to spiritual growth, a free search for truth and meaning, the right of conscience and practice of democracy, the goal of world community, and respect for the interdependent web of all existence. And as we, as Unitarians, try to live out these principles in our everyday lives, we also can contribute to the betterment of the community around us and the world. And now it's on to Jane and Michael Servetus.
Good morning, and thanks for this opportunity to speak to you this morning. Have you ever wondered about the earliest Unitarians? Where did we come from, anyways? What's this all about? Well, Michael Servetus, as Pam said, was one of the very earliest. So today, we'll touch on his era, honor his life and beliefs, and examine a little of how those beliefs are related to today's Unitarian principles. So place yourself in Spain, northern Spain. Christopher Columbus crossed the ocean blue in 1492, right? So we're about 10, 20 years later than that. So we're still in that wonderful era when Spain was exploring all over the world, particularly in the South Americas. And sadly, we're also in the era of the Spanish Inquisition, which started up about 30 years before Servetus was born in 1506. And it's actually started right in the heart of the north central part of Spain where he was born. And just a few years before he was born, in 1501, they were still making royal decrees requiring that Jews and Muslims must convert to Orthodox Catholicism or leave the area. And many groups were being investigated and imprisoned if they questioned Orthodox Catholic ideas. So I want you to think about that's the kind of environment that he grew up in. So born in 1506, and as a youth, he studied law in Toulouse, France, which is really just a little bit north of where he was born, just over the Pyrenees, and Toulouse is right there. By the age of 17, he was already studying and working with a scholarly monk who was actually the chaplain in the King Charles V's court. So I had struggled with this, but Charles V ruled northern Spain. That's areas of Aragon and Castile where this guy was born. But he also ruled the Holy Roman Empire. So we're talking very powerful people that he was able to associate with. He traveled, in fact, with the king's court to Italy, and he was really dismayed by the wealthy extravagance of the Catholic Church in that country. He did research as part of his time with this scholarly monk, and specifically he was involved in three religious investigations and saw mystics and early Protestants imprisoned for their beliefs. He also studied the original biblical writings in their original form in Greek and Hebrew. So like so many Europeans, he spoke, you know, French and Spanish and Greek and Hebrew. Makes you feel really not very smart at all. As far as I know, he didn't speak English, though, and that's supposed to be hard, right? Where am I? So, yeah, he studied original biblical writings, but he had also read the Quran, the central religious text of Islam. In addition to these early studies in law and the Bible, Michael Savridis was versed in many sciences, mathematics, astronomy, meteorology, geography. And when he was about 30, after, you know, a number of life adventures, he went back to school and studied human anatomy, medicine, and pharmacology. This was no slouch. This guy was a bright man. He's renowned in the history of medicine and theology. For example, he's celebrated as the first European to publish a description of how the blood circulates through the lungs to be refreshed with oxygen. Prior to his writing, they thought that happened somehow in the heart. But it's his theological views that are really amazing in view of how he lived with the Inquisition. We know about his beliefs because by the age of 22, he was writing theological essays and publishing them. Here are some of his ideas in the context of our Unitarian principles today. So in terms of inherent dignity and worth of every person, Servetus thought that all people, including non-Christians, were capable of improvement. He did not restrict the benefits of faith to a few recipients of God's grace, as the Calvinists did, because this is also the era of John Calvin. Rather, he felt that grace abounds, and we need only the intelligence and free will to grasp it. In terms of our principle for free and responsible search for truth and meaning, I'm going to give you about 4 points here. He criticized the orthodox doctrine of the Trinity, that's the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. He believed that Jesus was not another Godhead separate from the Father, but rather more like God's voice on earth. And some people call that a non-Trinitarian Christology. Christology? Not sure. He did not agree with the doctrine of original sin or salvation based upon repentance. He opposed infant baptism, perhaps because it was forced on some people in the area where he grew up. And some aspects of his thinking certainly later influenced those who founded Unitarian churches, both in Transylvania and in Poland, where the early churches were. However, as you can imagine, he was condemned for his beliefs by Catholics and Protestants alike. And he actually faced the Spanish Inquisition a couple of times and managed to, you know, do that escape with the skin of your teeth trick. He was called to face the French Inquisition, but someone else got to him first. So he moved around a little bit, but the biggest part of his life from his middle 30s until the time that he died, so about 15 years, he lived in Lyon, France, where he practiced medicine. And it's not really known for sure why he was taking the journey that he did, but it may have been that he was going home to visit his family. He was certainly on a journey. And he passed through Geneva for really reasons unknown in history. But Geneva is the place where John Calvin was the pastor of a very strong sort of city council, and the city councils were like municipalities, and they ran the joint at that time. And he attended a church service in Geneva where someone recognized him, and he was arrested just as a traveler, you know. And even though the city did not have any authority over him, because their laws quite clearly state that unless you're a resident of the city, the council wouldn't have any authority over you. But he was arrested while traveling through the city, and in due course he was burned at the stake as a heretic. Heretic. By order of the city's Protestant governing council, and based on information that was provided by John Calvin. It was interesting that at that time the person who laid the complaint was also imprisoned, as well as the person they were complaining against. So sort of as a technicality, John Calvin's secretary laid the complaint, and he was the one that was imprisoned. But, you know, then when the hearings are all done, they release, you know, the person who was not successful. That's really interesting quirk of the laws of the time. Michael Servetus died October 27 in 1553. He was probably about 47, and he died in Geneva, Switzerland, as a tourist, really. So one of the things that he did for the world with his life and his death was that there was such an outcry, such widespread aversion to the way that he was imprisoned and put to death, that really signaled the birth in Europe of a more religious tolerance, a principle that's now more important to modern Universalists and Unitarians than is the whole issue around the Trinity. You know, there's lots more, but that seems like plenty. You know, I'd be happy to try and answer questions. And then I have another tiny piece for you. If there's anybody that wants to.
Yeah, I'm wondering,
when he was first considered Unitarian or celebrated as a forebear. If you know that.
Yeah, that's a good question, Pam. Not really till later, because there was no Unitarianism really at that time. But later, actually Philip Hewitt in Vancouver does this the best. And since you asked that lovely question, and I didn't even plant it, I just want to tell you this little bit. Philip Hewitt was a Unitarian minister in Vancouver for about 35 years, and he felt that Unitarian Universalism is sort of built around three main strands, like a rope gets stronger with these three strands. The Unitarianism part is that the holy is just one. So that comes from Servetus originally. Universalism, that all are worthy. He also had that view. And humanism, that a human life is worth living for its own sake, without reference to any kind of supernatural authority at all. So, you know, lots of people from probably 300 years ago, you know, began to see Servetus as one of the very earliest people who put forward Unitarian views.
I've got another mic here now. I'm going to just add a little something to that, around the time of Jesus, there was always and continued to be a strand of non-Trinitarians. This group believed that Jesus lived, that he had a good life and had an important message. But among a lot of people at that time, there was no belief that he was God's Son, for example. And it was at the Council of Nicaea, and I think it's 400 and something, that the Catholic Church wanted to make everybody believe the same thing. And so they codified what they wanted everybody to believe. So the thread, though, however, has gone along for centuries, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, other questions? Did you want? You're curious?
I don't even know if Jesus existed.
That's a good question. How do we know?
I personally think it's made up.
Yeah.
I consider myself to be an atheist,
yeah.
So I really don't believe in Jesus or God. I think everything about Catholic Church. I grew up being Catholic.
Yeah.
I just held all the crap like the Trinity and stuff when I grew up, and I personally believe most religions are kind of goofy and insane. And I personally also kind of feel hard to be sympathetic with Muslims because I believe that most Muslims are very crybaby-ish and should grow some fucking balls.
Oh.
Like, seriously, getting thrown fits over drawing their prophet? Well, I don't believe that.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing your views. It's really a shame that my husband isn't here, because he, too, is an atheist. You probably find there are quite a few of us in this fellowship who are atheists. But we do try to be tolerant of the views of others within our congregation and outside of our fellowship as well. And as you've heard today, that's one of the very earliest principles of Unitarians is religious tolerance. So we aim to go there. Anybody else? Well, I just wanted to let you know that you have a wonderful opportunity to study a Unitarian who interests you and who maybe made a contribution of some kind, and share your ideas with the rest of us here. And so we met during the summer, and the fellowship members who were there at that time identified a half a dozen famous Unitarians that they would like to hear about. So those are sort of our priority ones at this point. And I have a list of those of you who said you might be interested to present. So if anybody has time between now and November the 30th, this would be a good time. I will be calling you if you don't come forward today. but if you've got an idea for a famous Unitarian that you would really like to talk about, then please come see me. I'd be happy to talk with you. What we're trying to do is to give you a little bit of understanding about the person and also to share with you why they're important in the context of our principles today. So that's what I've been trying to do. Hope you enjoyed that.
Thank you so much, Jane. That was very interesting. I've known a little bit about Servetus for, I don't know, quite a few years, but never the detail that you presented us with today and the connections that I was able to make with, oh yeah, that kind of comes down through our tradition in a way that I hadn't really thought of as coming from him. And thank you, Pam, for the introduction and the outline that you gave us. And it reminded me that among the early American politicians, the revolutionaries who led the Americans against the British, there were certain ideas and there was a wisdom that was part of that group, which doesn't seem to be really lauded these days. A lot of closing down seems to have taken place, whereas these people were very open and broad and thought that had confidence in people's intelligence and goodwill and the connection of people to one another and to the world that they lived in. So anyway, Pam, thanks for reminding us of that, and I'm sure looking forward to these upcoming presentations on more Unitarians.